You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Late last year, the High Court ruled against the Ministry of Social Development on one of their practices in recovering welfare payments. MSD had, for the last 20 years, required that successful ACC claimants pay back any supplementary assistance they had received while waiting for their claim to be resolved, such as through the accommodation supplement. This approach would often mean claimants would be left with a significantly reduced payout and even debt. Last month, the government began passing legislation that would retroactively make these practices legal, slashing any hopes of forgiving the outstanding debts that were, until recently, unlawful. The Social Security Accident Compensation and Calculation of Weekly Income Amendment Bill has been pushed through Parliament under urgency, limiting scrutiny. However, despite a narrow timeframe to submit on the Select Committee, over 800 responses were received. Producer Theo spoke to Dr. Susan St. John, Honorary Associate Professor at the University of Auckland and one of the submitters to the Bill Select Committee, about the consequences this legislation will have.
Kia ora. So first of all, it's a little bit hard to wrap your head around what this legislation actually is. So can you briefly tell us what's going on with this bill that the government's trying to push through Parliament?
Well, I do sympathise with what you've said there. It is extremely difficult to get your head around exactly what's involved here. In essence, and just oversimple, really, what was happening was that when a claimant had ACC back pay, reflecting the fact that they'd had to wait for some time before ACC approved their claim, that back pay essentially cancels out whatever benefits had been paid in the interim. And maybe that's fair enough for a core benefit, but the argument is about the supplementary benefits that somebody on a benefit may access simply because they need extra assistance for accommodation, food, for special disability support, that kind of thing, which the ministry had been treating rather inconsistently. And there was a dispute over the MSD creating debts for a claimant where there wasn't enough back pay to cover this. And so that was taken to court, and the High Court decision was that what the MSD had been doing by deducting these supplementary payments was illegal. Instead of appealing that decision, which one might have thought would have been logical, the government chose to change the law and to change it retrospectively and thought that they would be able to push it through extremely quickly.
So the government was found to be doing something unlawful and is now retrospectively pushing through legislation to make what they did legal?
Yes, and I think they really underestimated how much outrage there would be. I couldn't understand at the first reading why Labor voted for it, but that was to ensure that it had a select committee process. So the government had assumed that it could push it through under urgency without the usual scrutiny for this kind of thing. And Labor managed to get the agreement that it would go to a select committee. Now, unfortunately, the time between the bill being released and the final close-off time for submissions was 2.5 days. And most of us have other jobs, but astonishingly, there was 850 submissions. Now, it took me 12 hours to do my submission. You can imagine 850, the effort that went into that. So that was to be in last Friday at midnight, and then the select committee met on Monday of this week and heard 8 of those submissions. Then it went away and wrote its report, put the report out, and we had the second reading yesterday. And the second reading was voted to go to committee stage with an amendment that National had suggested, which had minimal impact as far as I can see, but with the committee stage, there is the possibility of negotiating other kinds of amendments with the other parties. I don't know what's been going on in Parliament today or when it comes back into the House for its final reading, but you can see what a pressured system it is.
Yeah, and just touching on that, I mean, the government's pushed this through quite quickly, so it must be a fairly unpopular kind of policy with at least some stakeholders. Who are the people who are going to be most affected or, in fact, harmed by this legislation going through?
Yes, well, the 850 shows you that a lot of people are affected. And, of course, some of those submissions are from people who advocate and for legal firms who help ACC claimants with their reviews. But when we think about the people that are actually affected, many of those have made submissions as well. And they tend to be amongst the worst off, the people that have had to go on benefits, they had no other means of support. It reflects long-term claim issues that have been delayed or been prolonged in some way by ACC before decision. This could be sensitive claims. It could be people who have argued for a loss of potential earnings compensation because of injuries they sustained before they were earning, or they were on a student allowance or something like that. So those people are the ones whose submissions should have been given a great deal of attention. And I can't see how the Select Committee had time to read those 850 submissions.
No, and just to be clear, if someone is receiving a main benefit while they're awaiting for an ACC claim to be resolved and they're accessing these supplementary forms of income, if they're accessing those supplementary forms of income and then they eventually get that claim and it is less than the supplements that they were receiving overall, does that mean that they would be placed into debt to repay those supplements?
Yes, it's quite astonishing. And I must say, it's taken me a little bit of time just to think that one through, because here you have people who thought by entering into this process with their ACC claim that they would be advantaged in the long run, and some of them clearly are not.
I mean, that's astounding, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, what's the point of pursuing an ACC claim if in the end the money is just going to be shuffled to a different area of government and leave them saddled with debt? I mean, a abuse and care survivor who had gone through this process in good faith, after being urged to lodge an ACC claim, they could potentially be left with more debt after this process.
Yeah, and wondering why on earth they put themselves through all that trauma of trying to get the ACC claim established, you know, using advocacy, all the sorts of processes they have to go through. Why did they bother if that was going to be the outcome? Of course, you know, they would be on the ACC weekly compensation payment in the future, once it was established. So they would gain in the future, possibly, from being there, but with a debt. And that debt might be repaid slowly or not, who knows. Something would be hanging over their heads, and it's just quite astonishing that that could have been the case.
Yeah, and you've mentioned Labor's earlier support for this legislation. Now, since then, they've announced that they would be looking for giving the Ministry of Social Development discretionary powers in whether to pursue clawbacks that would cause future hardship and inequity, to not claw back disability and rehab allowances, and to exempt victims of abuse in state care. But is that enough in your view?
In my view, the whole bill should have been thrown out, and we should have been asking the question, how exactly are we operating this system? What is wrong with it? What are all the unintended consequences happening already? And why do we want to solidify that into a law which doesn't give discretion to the Ministry of Social Development? So it would, to me, be appropriate to have the bill thrown out.
Yeah, and one of the unintended consequences that you've highlighted in your recent Substack article was that of how this policy change also has implications for those claimants who have partners.
Yes, I'm still finding this unbelievable. But because the benefit system is based on the notion of a married couple as the unit, so where there's a partnership, this might be a benefit for both of them at the couple rate. Apparently, that is all clawed back as well from the one partner who's making the claim because they're injured. I find that unbelievable, and it's part of a wider problem within the welfare system of not treating people as individuals, as they are in ACC, and with these kind of arrangements trying to marry two different types of system together. And of course, that generates all these different forms of inequity.
So it's effectively penalising claimants who have a partner.
One would perceive that, yes, unbelievably. I mean, that's actually not the only thing that should have been looked at. We should have also been looking at how the system impacts on reclaiming things like working for families, or how working for families actually work. And I've just been toying with this thought that if somebody is losing all their benefit for the periods of back pay, and so they are deemed to be on ACC alone in that period, they could be eligible for the in-work tax credit. I mean, who's talking about these sorts of things?
And the Minister for Social Development, Louise Upston, has said that overall these changes bring practices into alignment with long-standing policy. I mean, does this align with the mission or spirit of the Ministry of Social Development or ACC in New Zealand and our wider social security system?
No, not with ACC. I think with the benefits system, the idea that you have a highly targeted system and you mustn't give more than a dollar than is actually earned or deserved within that system is very harsh, and the harshness of it is reflected in this bill and the consequences of that.
That was Honorary Associate Professor Susan St. John on the inequitable impact of the Social Security Amendment Bill currently being rushed through Parliament.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.